as cabs. At Radio Cab, it's the individual owners. I own two different vehicles at Radio Cab, so or two half shares, I should say. I'm going to pay $600 more than my usual fees. That doesn't come from the company, like Testify's company does. I think Broadway pays for all their vehicles. They don't have, but at Radio, it's the owners themselves, and there's many of us in this room that are going to be hit with a $300 to $600 bill, if not more, depending on how many shares you own, in August, at the end of August. And it's a huge burden, especially when you're dealing with trying to keep a car or two or three cars on the road, and you're dealing with limited resources because a whole bunch of them have been taken away. And when Mr. Entler talks about that 7 to 8 to 13% decrease, we're not talking about an even decrease across the board that the TNCs are just picking up these trips and we're losing these. We're losing prime quality trips because they're taking the ones that have credit cards and cell phones, typically going to the airport, longer trips, and we're picking up more of the grocery store, short trip rides. So we're losing $40 trips and picking up more $7 trips.
But Mr. Campbell, the data shows that the length of trips for TNCs and taxis is about the same, like 12 and a half minutes versus 14 minutes.
I don't know how to undo all that and look at that. I just know that I spoke to our dispatch manager who specifically looked at that information, and that's the information he told me. I can talk to him. I can get you that information in more of a dialed in manner so that you can see exactly what I'm talking about. That's how he explained it to me.
On the permit fees, I think that we should, if we legally can, postpone assessing those permit fees on Radio Cab and the other companies until we've developed a comprehensive change to the permits based on a cost recovery model. So I'm going to consult with staff and see if that's at all possible, just simply postpone assessing those fees until we have a more comprehensive solution.
Or you could also charge Uber and Lyft and all them the same fees and then work it out and see what the fair ratio is for everybody to pay into the system.
Okay. Thank you. So I guess I'll ask this as a question, Mr. Campbell, but it's also something I was going to suggest to Commissioner Novick in the next phase here to consider. But the task force has recommended, we really need to move from sort of the permitting mode to a compliance and enforcement mode. And I know that costs money, costs resources to hire people in city government to enforce the laws. But I think it's critically important because, I find myself at each one of these hearings sort of trying to figure out what is the truth here. And the only way we're going to have truth is through hard-nosed verification and enforcement. So how do you feel about a 50-cent per passenger fee that would go to dedicate? Now, I don't know if 50 cents is the right number, but just like we're doing a 10-cent way fee, a 50-cent fee dedicated to compliance and enforcement. And we probably don't even need your permit fees under that kind of scenario.
I've been very open to the fact that I think that is, and I brought it up in subcommittees, and this is my point of view representing the driver, so don't let the TFL get in the way here, whatever they're called. TFA, sorry. I believe that that's the most fair way to do it. Whatever that number is, 50 cents, 65
cents
per trip, the consumer's going to pick who they want to pick. But if they all have to pay that one fee that goes to fund the entire system, then that's the most fair way to do it, in my mind.
Okay.
That's all well and good if the resulting savings is passed on to the drivers, whatever nature. If it's simply more money in the pockets of the corporations, be they TNCs or...
It would be passed straightforward to the passenger.
But currently the corporations are paying for the enforcement.
On a per-ride basis.
Yeah, I'm suggesting... We probably don't need the permit fees if we can collect a per-ride flat fee that comes straight from the passenger.
Well, that's
like creating a sales tax that takes the place of an income tax.
Right? Well, I mean, we're talking about a 10-cent.
We're talking not about that. I'm proposing that.
We're talking about a 10-cent way fee, so this would be the same concept.
Yeah.
Well, since we're parking either questions or follow-up, Steve, could I also ask, maybe our city attorney could just prepare a little memo for us on what currently is the scope of authority of the Innovation Task Force and the existing regulatory body that we have? Because I think it seemed like we have two different bodies that have some authority. Now I'm getting confused about really who does what. And so if we have a board of review and a set of regulations and code that apply to that, and we have a task force. I'd like just a little primer on the legal authority of both bodies, and to what extent does the Board of Review still operate and function, and for what purpose?
The recommendation is to get rid of the Board of Review and make it something ineffective, basically a consulting group.
We haven't adopted any recommendations, so I'm just
that. I'm just telling you what the recommendation is. Yeah,
I appreciate
the question.
It's another issue we want to hear from you on.
I'd like to better understand what is its status in this interim period.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much.
All good.
Thank you.
And thank you, gentlemen.
Keep it coming. Thank you. Okay, I think we have a TNC driver rep, Dan Payton.
Good afternoon. My name's Dan Payton. I'm a driver and a passenger. I've only, at this point, driven for Lyft and ridden with Lyft. I haven't utilized Uber at this point. But I just wanted to say thank you guys for all of your work. This is not just a simple, do we allow, do we not, do we send him home, do we keep him going? There's a lot of ins and outs to make everybody happy here, and I really appreciate everyone's work on all the councils and task force and everything to make this happen. Obviously, there's going to be a lot of butting heads going on when we're trying to merge a couple of different things together here. But, I mean, the way I see it, everyone's got a GPS locator and a computer in their pocket. So it's just kind of the next evolution to, you know, use the available technology we have to make things more efficient and get the passengers basically service as quickly and efficiently as possible. Still would like to reiterate that everyone needs to think of the passengers involved. From my own previous experience, I had attempted a few times to use previous transportation options, but honestly, I stopped being a customer. So at this point, now I have options to get around. Granted, there's not 24/7 wheelchair access vehicles available, but I've been noticing improvements as time goes on. It's getting better and better. And as someone who basically didn't have very many options at all to get around, now I have a lot more. And just one second here. And that's kind of the issue with the wave service, is having those dedicated vehicles available for use. Because I know with some of the other transportation companies, they have wheelchair-accessible vehicles, but they're also available to be used for standard calls as well. So it kind of affects the availability. So how do we go and say, hey, we need to have these particular vehicles available and pull them away from whatever they're currently doing? Like, I heard the non-emergency medical transportation pays X hourly rate. So for Lyft and Uber to have basically guaranteed wave service, they're going to have to pay an hourly rate to match or exceed. But we're not, you know, 24-hour right now, but like I said, it's getting better. At first, you know, when I fired up the app on both of them, it'd say, oh, well, you know, I live down near, like, Oswego, sort of by Tualatin, so I'm pretty much out of the range of most of the services. But I've noticed both Lyft and Uber have changed their apps now so that when you're further away from the city, you can still get a wave vehicle. This morning when I looked before I came here, you could get one as far south as Wilsonville. It's obviously going to take a little longer to get there, but I'm fine with that. You know, I'm not in the central core of downtown. But I'm just saying, everyone stick with it. We're going to get this worked out. Urge you guys to listen to the passengers as well as the people operating vehicles. And on the driver perspective, it's worked great for me. It's the same thing everybody said, you know. Setting your own hours and controlling your work environment is key for me. But being a driver gives me flexibility when, honestly, other ways I have not been able to have gainful employment. So for me specifically, it works very well. And I'd just like to thank everyone again, and please just stay the course. And everyone think of the other parties involved, passengers, drivers, drivers, passengers, business owners, and just kind of take a step back is my main advice.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Payton, I do have a question, which is that we've heard the argument made that lots of TNC drivers, when they realize how much cost they're incurring in the wear and tear in their car, realize that it's not worth it and quit. Are you able to sort of figure out in advance what the wear and tear in your car costs are and figure out if it's worth it to you counting that in?
It seems like there's a couple different types of people driving. There's some that want to drive for a TNC as a full-time job. They're the ones driving, you know, for Lyft and Uber. And there's other people like me that are just kind of a part-time deal. For me, I don't really factor in wear and tear because I only drive a few hours a week. But I would say, you know, there's probably going to be some cost involved, obviously, the more you drive. But the one thing that has surprised me, though, is how few miles I've actually driven. Because at the most, I've worked probably 10 or 12 hours a week. And I'd be lucky maybe to do 30 or 40 miles in a night. It's a lot of real short hops here and there. People getting from their bars back to their hotels or homes. And they say, oh, well, we could have walked, but, you know, we're drunk. It's better just to ride with someone. So I think that is a valid concern. But surprisingly, I only have to fill up once a week when I'm driving the tank, and it's been a lot less than I've thought.
Thank you very much.
Thanks.
Okay, let's move to folks on the sign-up sheet, I think. No, I'm sorry. I left out LaVon Heister from the Portland Commission on Disability. Sorry. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Thank you for having me today. Thank you to the task force for asking PCOD to come. One thing I'd like to say is that this has been, for the Portland Commission on Disability, a real opportunity to have a voice and become more involved at an earlier stage. Oftentimes on the commission, we're brought in after all the plans are already done, and you say, oh, please approve this, or, you know, give us feedback. And sometimes it's such a mess that it's a little bit late for us to be getting involved. And I feel like this time we were brought in early. There were some rocky starts, but really all of us have been very impressed in how we have been able to work together through Joe's expertise and lived experience coming in. And he does have a lot of expertise above and beyond lived experience. He also has expertise because he's been working in the disability advocacy field for a long time. So it's been wonderful to have this opportunity to work together, and I really do appreciate that and want to make that very clear. For the commission, we're not so invested in how we get to wherever we're going to be. We're invested in the outcome. We're invested that people with disabilities are included in the process of making the decisions, that our voice is heard, that we're not just there as a token. Oh, look, we've put someone with a disability on the task force, so we've done our part. And that we're actually being included in the decision-making and bringing forth ideas that maybe wouldn't have come out of people who don't know the experience of living in a body that needs a wheelchair as a tool to get around. And so I think that that's what's really important to us, is not how we get there. So we're not, because we have people on the commission, we have an Uber driver on the commission, we have people who are on various different sides of the issue. So it's not, for us, it's not about how you get there, it's about getting us there. And for the first time, really, I think we feel like the disability community is being considered in this process. The 20% rule of WAVE accessible vehicles was a really great idea, and there was someone in the disability community who did bring that in. It was a great idea, but it was not followed up on to see if it was actually making the difference that was needed. And I think that's where we're at now, is that when you get to the end of the trial period, the pilot period, that what is going to be done to make sure that it is going to continue working for our community. And so we would like to ask that we have people involved as this moves forward from the commission, And that we also, when there are, you're ready to take things in front of council, that you also come in front of the Portland Commission on Disability, because you're going to get a cross-disability perspective by coming in front of us, whereas if it goes straight here, you're going to have us come in and testify. But if you bring it in front of us, you're going to get people like myself who are legally blind. You know, you're going to get someone who has the lived experience of living with a mental illness, which, let me tell you, does affect your transportation needs. And you're going to get this wider variety. We've been focused on wave-accessible vehicles, which is really important, but I am hoping moving forward that this will also begin to look at some of the other issues that are experienced out in the community. So really, I want to keep this short and sweet. I'm going to end there, but I do have one other little note that's off topic. Earlier, Mayor Hales, you did say about the, you know, doing the wave or the thumbs up. And for those of us who have limited vision, that's not an accessible format. And I noticed you haven't really been enforcing it, but I would say if you can say, oh, I see some hands out there or something like that, so we do create an accessible
format.
Good
suggestion. Thank you very much.
Any questions?
Questions for Lon. Thank you very much. Okay, excellent. Let's move on to public testimony. So if you've already heard your points made, obviously you can waive your right to speak, but those who are signed up, let's take them in order.
We have 65 people signed up. The first three are Stephen Lovejoy, John Orr, and Nona Carrasco. Okay. And they'll be followed by Jim Poorman, Paul Vanneman, and Dorn Matthews.
Okay, whoever would like to go first?
I'll go first. My name is Steve Lovejoy. I work for Radio Cab. I've been a cab driver for 6 years. I would like to just first start out by saying Radio Cab has been carrying people with bicycles for our entire time, and unlike somebody else, we don't charge extra for it. So it's not a big innovation for this Uber pedal. My tone has kind of changed after sitting here and listening to this today. After the last city council meeting, I was furious, like most of the cab drivers in here, so I kind of have to reprogram myself for what I'm going to say up here. But I would like to say that Mayor Hales, a couple of weeks ago, I watched an interview with you on KATU, at which during the interview you stated that you asked some very tough questions to the TNCs and that you had raised the bar nationally, if not internationally, in dealing with the TNCs. And you specifically cited insurance requirements, driver background checks, and disabled people accessibility. Since this 120-day pilot program is about over, these are a few things that I've noticed. Taxis are required to have commercial insurance. TNCs are not. Taxi drivers are required to go through a city background check. TNC drivers are not. And taxi companies are required to have a certain percentage of their fleet, like we've all been stated here, to be wheelchair accessible. TNCs do not. What is there, 2,500 Ubers? I just looked on there. They have one wheelchair accessible vehicle. And if you're lucky, if you can even get that. So after I watched your interview, I was kind of mad because you sat there and were telling the people that you had done all this innovation, but nothing has changed. It's like in every city, they're just kowtowing to Uber and letting them, changing the rules to modify for them. Things that I have noticed is up until today.
Try to wrap up quickly.
Okay, up until today, I have noticed a lack of concern for how this has affected our industry. Today, it's been a little more warm to our industry rather than just the TNCs. I've also noticed unlimited access from the TNCs to City Hall. Well, we have very limited access to City Hall. And most importantly, I've noticed some questionable ethics that have gone on with members of our city council that have made everybody question it. You also said in there that we were unhappy about the rules because we were afraid of competition. And that simply is not true. You've stacked the deck against us and have essentially sent us into a gunfight with a armed with only a slingshot, and that's what we're unhappy about. We're not afraid of competition, by no means. We're professional drivers. We're not part-time drivers. So I just wanted to let that be said, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My name's John, radio cab driver, and so I'm here today. I wanted to talk about, well, thank you all for letting me listen to me and let me be here. Uber says that the ADA doesn't apply to them. That's great. You got them to put on four vehicles that were already in existence in Portland that you could get through another means of dispatch. So they really added a net of no vehicles, but wow, you can order them on your phone. That's great. So they added no net new vehicles to the city, and yet we were required to have 10% of the fleets. So it was going to be up to 20. But the ADA doesn't apply to them. So Uber could incentivize wave trips. You know, they give out a ton of freebies, a ton of promos, free $20 off when you sign up your friend, blah, blah, blah. Okay, free $250 bonus for signing up a driver. They've got money to throw around. They could easily, if it mattered to them or if they were required to do it, they could incentivize the wave trips, okay? But it's up to you to require them to do that, okay? They also say, well, we're just a technology company. But in other markets, in California, they did a pilot program where they, in addition to their loan programs, they actually also did leases for drivers of sedans. So they actually did a short-term lease that was more flexible than a typical car lease. Okay, so if they can do that for sedans because that's profitable, they could be regulated just like taxi companies to have 10% of their fleet be wheelchair-accessible vehicles, and then they are in the business of leasing vehicles to their drivers, or at least they've experimented with that in another market. They could be made to do that here, or they could leave and you could license more taxis and we'll continue to do it at a rate of 10% of our fleets, or 20 if you mandate that or whatever the regulation is set for, but we're not going to put four vehicles on the road that were already serving Portland through another means of dispatch and all of a sudden claim, we're really proud of this. Look at how many wheelchair accessible vehicles, and our stats look really great because we cooked the books, and you know, if a car was too far away and you didn't and you ordered something else, then that's not included. And this time started late, so I still have about another minute. Okay.
We're gonna wrap.
So there, yeah, just can we turn that beeper off? Anyway, so the cab industry, there's talk of a per-ride fee, okay? The cab industry has already invested heavily in the cost of these wheelchair-accessible vehicles. I have a friend who drives one.
I drive one.
Okay, these two friends also. Super expensive, especially the old Sprinters, but the Transit Connects as well. More expensive for fuel, more expensive to put on the vehicle, oil changes, everything. Okay, so that cost has already been incurred by our industry. I hope that you'll do what's fair, at least somewhat fair in one area, and not saddle the taxi industry, the legitimate taxi industry, with any more of the cost to help Uber, who's just bleeding money out in promotions but can't afford to be ADA compliant. Don't charge us to subsidize their ADA compliance. That would be ridiculous. Okay, another way that these statistics are ridiculous is our time calls aren't included. So you look at these numbers, and their numbers are great, and ours aren't. But we take a ton of prearranged calls where the wait time is zero because we're already sitting there waiting because we offer that service to our customers, and you're accepting a data sheet that has that thrown out. I mean, again, you're letting this be stacked against us. And, I mean, with all the lip service that's been paid to fairness and making sure everyone makes a living wage, I was kind of baffled by this until I read an article in the Willamette Week that discussed how a lobbyist that has previously been hired by Mr. Novick, Mr. Hales, and Mr. Saltzman has been hired by Uber. And I think one of your peers... Okay, so, and then it became, it made a little more sense how instead of saying, hey, these are policies that have been around for decades that, you know, sometimes aren't perfect, but most of the problems have been with a limited number of vehicles, policies that have worked, but we're in the paying lip service to fairness, we're going to completely bend over backwards, change these policies to fit the TNC business model at a detriment to taxi companies who have their businesses built around the existing regulations, and now we have to change to adapt to regulations that are tailored specifically to their business model. And with the appearance of impropriety based on this lobbying issue, it really, you know, yeah, I think you guys have some explaining to do, or at least two of you remaining members up here. I would like you to answer that. I was unsatisfied with what I read in the newspaper, and the OSEUM is for the stench of corruption.
Thanks. Go ahead.
Good afternoon. My name is Nona Carrasco, and I drive for Radio Cab, and I also sit on the board of the safety board. I come from a 16-year background in social services and developmental health. I have found that our company's standards of professionalism align with my personal ideals. I take a great deal of pride in the services that I perform, including my services as a wheelchair van driver, as I also believe that all of our drivers do. We have learned through experience how to best navigate through the Portland streets, how to best service our riders, sober or otherwise, and how to best keep our vehicles operating safely. It takes a professional to accomplish these goals, and I don't believe that Uber and other services are providing that level of expertise. They may have some full-time drivers, but their recruitment efforts are directed at part-time, casual drivers. The concept of ride-sharing is a quaint notion that has nothing to do with the reality of their business. Inexperienced and untrained people are attempting to provide professional services, and they are compromising the safety of their passengers and my community. As I already said, we learn through experience. Uber's business model, however, anticipates and necessitates a large degree of driver turnover. In a Forbes article from January this year, Uber's own statistics report, and I will quote this, the service currently has 162,000 active U.S. drivers, which is quadruple the amount that it had a year ago. And of those 162,000 drivers, 40,000 gave their first trip in December of 2014, indicating that one in four Uber drivers is new to the service. Some drivers are filling out new markets, but others are replacing the many drivers who quit. Uber data shows 11% of Uber drivers stop driving within a month, and about half are gone within a year. It has become the Wild West of transportation providers and virtually no oversight or accountability. We have an existing system with... I'm almost done.
Oh, your time started late because mine went over because it's been over. So keep going.
Okay, then I'll...
We're going to lose a quorum in about half an hour, so please...
Okay. Virtually no oversight or accountability. I urge the council to apply the same standards and regulations that govern the taxi industry to the new TNC industry rather than lift the regulations, which will be detrimental. We have an existing system with a group of people in the City Private for Hire Transportation Board that, unlike the task force handpicked by an Uber lobbyist, have a wealth and depth of understanding in this industry and have been and are perfectly capable of continuing to address and expend the need of taxi service in Portland without causing a destruction of people's livelihoods and without going backwards to the days that did not provide equal and safe service to everyone.
Thanks.
Next three are Jim Poorman. That's Jim Poorman, Paul Vanneman, and Dorn Matthews, and they'll be followed by Ray Roche, Mike Engel, and James Peters.
Mayor, could we just do some housekeeping real quick?
Yeah, I think we got the time check.
I just want to be transparent about this. This was scheduled for 3 hours. I have a 5 o'clock excused absence and a second shift going into the evening tonight. You now have 60 people who are going to testify. This could go to 6 to 7. What is the will of the chair?
Well, there are a couple of options. I want to see what Commissioner Novick thinks as well. Go ahead and settle in. We're going to get to you no matter what, but do you want to continue it, or do you want to take a vote on accepting the report while we have a quorum at 5, what's your pleasure?
Who else is leaving at 5?
Nick is. So the three of us could stay.
It's a quorum.
Okay. All right. So we'll continue, I think, until 5:45, at which point you're going to lose me because I've got a 6 o'clock.
Mayor, in that case, I think we really need to ask people to stay within the time limit.
Okay, let's try to get everybody to stay within the time limit and keep moving. And if you've heard someone else cover your points, just say so. Okay. Welcome. Have a seat.
I'm going to stand up.
All right, go ahead.
I've been sitting all day.
All right, same here.
Well,
just give us your name. Sorry.
Oh, my name's Jim Parman. I work for Radio Cab. I'm on an insurance thing that I've been working on for a long time. And I've been talking to a lot of people, and I'm going to come up with a petition on the plan, insurance plan I got. I've had so many people. I mean, I've been doing it for 5-6 years now on this new plan. And the plan I got and the plan you got, I don't see no plan for insurance. I do not see no plan. There's a lot of cars out there, right? They got to have insurance, right? That's your job to make sure these people, you know, I'm not picking on you, but you are the boss, okay? Thousands of cars out there driving without no insurance. Can you keep track of all those people? How do you do it? I got a plan that you can keep track of all those people, okay? And plus, you're putting all these people in these cars with no insurance. Today, you're doing that.
I think they do have insurance.
You did that. No, they don't have insurance. You think they have commercial insurance that you're supposed to have, but you ask any of these Uber drivers, do they have insurance when they're driving around? No. What, personal insurance? You got commercial insurance. Show me the proof.
Okay, why don't you, sir, go ahead and finish your
testimony. Because I'm going to tell you why. Because I used to drive a town car service, okay, years ago. I was the only one, pretty much, driving my town car having commercial insurance. I went by rules and regulations, okay? These
That's
people
okay.
did
you
not.
You guys do cover this later because we got to keep
That's
on schedule.
That's commercial insurance. Yes.
Okay. Guys,
for what
guys, let's have the debate later. Let's
that,
keep
yeah, but is that, what is that for what period? Is that only when they pick up people?
I'll let you settle that with him, but make your points because you're running out of time.
Well, here's the thing, okay? What I really want, my proposal is to make sure that everybody has insurance. I've asked the people on these ideas by putting tags on their cars saying they're certified insured with the expiration date, okay? I mentioned it to so many people, and they love it.
Okay, good.
And see, because the thing is, why do we have all these license plates with the expiration dates? Do you understand?
I need you to finish up, sir.
Yeah. Real fast, right? I'm going to say, the reason is because people need to find out, you know, like the police, see if they got a license. But if we have a tag that says insured, with the expiration date?
Got it. Okay, thank you very much. Sir, you're next.
Yes, sir. My name is Dorn Matthews. I'm a radio cab driver. I heard a monopoly mentioned. Somebody said monopoly, and 10 companies is not a monopoly. It's a many-opoly. Let's
pick that up. An oligopoly, perhaps.
Is that it? Okay, there we go.
There's a word for it. Keep going here.
Doesn't sound as good. Let's see. So the things that should have already been handled before they even hit the streets, for example, if there's a limitation on the distance between you and a driver and you can't place an order, I thought these guys wanted to be cab drivers. I mean, there's so much business out there, and if you don't want to do the trip, why even bother? You know, and it's not their decision. It's the company's decided to make the proximity of the order placement extremely short. We don't have that limitation. I mean, you guys already know this. Let's see. I'm hearing, yes, a question mark on the insurance. I have no idea. Every time it was brought up, I heard, and I couldn't parse any of it. But as it stands, if there is any discrepancy whatsoever, those guys shouldn't have been on the road. I mean, that stands to reason. That's how many thousands of liabilities you're going to have to deal with in the future. It's kind of depressing. Let's see. So also, If any of you have seen Cab Dude out there, he's a guy in a van. He used to hide it. Now he has a top light because there's no enforcement. Everything's falling apart. So now we have Cab Dude. And I'm sure he's a cool guy, and your drunk daughters can trust him. But he's out there, and more than one of him. That's another thing. Also, you know what's going to happen if you ditch the cap system. You know what's going to happen. Everybody's going to be eating their shoes. It's not going to be pretty. There's got to be some way to stem the tide. We don't need 3 trillion drivers in the city professionally. Hey, why not? Let's see. The hands-off approach. Okay. So if there is anything about the improprieties and the scandal, I don't really know. I didn't read too much into it. But if that's the case, and it's been going back as far as the implication goes, all of you guys who showed up here in the onset, you were a meat shield. You got fined. I don't know if anybody got their car towed or anything, but it was just a big PR play stunt, and that's not cool by me.
All right, thank you. Thanks very much. You're on.
My name is Paul Vanneman. I've been a radio cab driver for just over 3 years. A little while back, I had the privilege of driving an older native of what's now referred to as North Williams neighborhood. She was the last holdout. Her house was nestled in the shadows of two sprawling luxury apartment buildings. Yet she refused to move. She told me that this was her home and that this was a community. And that when she went to a community meeting regarding her predicament, she realized that she was there merely to listen to what was going to happen. I believe that speaking here is an exercise in futility, and while I have nothing as saddening as her story, I have come to believe that these companies are going to be here, whether I like it or not. I've already begun to save to move out of this city because my income has dropped about 40% while rent is skyrocketing. And with 1,200, whatever they are, the ride-sharing things, and then three more cab companies, I don't know how anybody's going to be able to make a living doing this. I also don't understand that a company that came in here and wantonly broke the law was rewarded to operate with impunity, at least over this trial period. That doesn't make any sense to me, that when a company violates law, that then they are then rewarded. That, to me, is incredibly frustrating. And I also believe that for every cheerleader of this system of race-to-the-bottom economics, making this a $10-an-hour job that nobody can afford to live on anymore, I believe there are many people out there who feel, as I do, they feel alienated, and they feel the tension of that any day that the ground might fall out from under them. If there's any ethics involved in any of this, it would involve bolstering local business and not allowing predatory companies to claim our city as their new victory. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
The next three are Ray Roche, Mike Engel, and James Peters, and they will be followed by William Daniels, Justin Byington, and Vicki DeVincent.
Come on up.
Thank you. Okay, let's go ahead and go with Ray Roche, Mike Engel, William Daniels. Can you come on up?
Go ahead, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Ray Roche. I'm a radio cab driver for about the last 4 years. Thank you for having me. I want to touch a little bit on the immigrant taxi drivers. They were brought into this country and promised a lot of promises. And I'm not going to point out all those promises. I'll let the lawyers for them do that. But they were promised to assimilate into our community, our customs, and our culture. And at these meetings, there's been less than 1% representatives from these people. They don't even know, and I've talked to several of them the last week, they don't even know that these chamber meetings are being held or where they're being held, which I think is... It's a damn shame. The rest of this basically pertains to them as well as the rest of us. But for the last 120 days, our lives have been put on hold. We c- cannot make any decisions about our standard of living, our whether we want to put our children in a better school, buy them more school supplies. I believe this chamber has had a raise in the last 4 months where our incomes have diminished in the last 4 months. And now you just added another 4 months, so that's 8 months out of our lives that we can't make any decisions. We can't make any decisions of whether we can replace a 23-year-old car that we're driving or anything in relation to our families. I think it's selfish, and I think it's just rude way of treating your citizens. I applaud your task force for the work that they've done, the many hours that they put in. But when I hear the recommendations that they make, I have to wonder how many private room meetings they've had with Mr. Weiner. Because how can you not put caps when Uber wants to add 10,000 drivers to this city? And right now, unless Uber drivers are surging, they're not making any money. What they're doing is they're diluting everybody's income. They go out and they make two or three rides a day. We get two or three rides a day, so none of us make any money.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Go ahead.
My name is Mike Engel, and I'm retired. They've often covered many of the things that are my point, primarily that Uber came here under the deception that they were something new, that they were part of the sharing economy. A few people would be carpooling, yet they have testified in hearing after hearing about their jobs as cab drivers and how much time they're spending, 40, 50, 60, 70 hours a week in their vehicles. Yet they claim to their private insurance companies that they aren't for hire vehicles. That is the deception that brings on this whole Uber situation. And you've talked about this. You need to demand proof from these vehicles and these vehicle operators that their insurance companies acknowledge that they are insuring a for-hire vehicle. Yeah. And even though some of the drivers on that platform claim that they have collision and comprehensive insurance from their company, they don't. The other thing is that vehicle inspections, fees, license fees, taxes, vehicle identifications, and marking are missing. So actually, all you have to do is have an Uber driver's cell phone and a vehicle, and you are an Uber driver. All you need to do is have their platform, type it in. You can come out in your 1953 Honda and drive your car. We need to have vehicle markings and identification. Anyway, the decision that you make here is...
Hey, folks, let him finish, please.
The decision that you make here will either be to stand up for the local businesses or not. Many countries, entire countries, many metropolitan jurisdictions within the United States have refused to fall for their deception, and you could be one of them. Thank you.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Commissioner Fritz, Mayor Hales, Commissioner Novick, Commissioner Fish, thanks for being here with us today. My name is William Daniels. I drive for Radio Cab. As you know, Portland has a system that is well established to manage the need for taxi service. City employees are very capable of fulfilling their job to responding to changing needs and changing technology. Therefore, it is okay to say no to arrogant companies that bully their way into Portland, to selfish companies that want to rewrite the rules to benefit them specifically, to sneaky companies that want to seduce you today because they want to take from the citizens of Portland tomorrow. For all the reasons that have ever been stated, it's okay to say no. For any one of the reasons that have been stated, it's okay to say no. Donald Trump is attracting a lot of support among voters because voters are fed up with politics as usual. Highly paid lobbyists who get special access, special favors from politicians. Voters are fed up with slick talk by corporations that sound really good up front, but that turn out to be really bad for our people and our communities. Two weeks ago, right here in Portland, Bernie Sanders drew the largest group of people of any presidential candidate with a message that said, "We the people are fed up with having our lives and our communities be ransacked by billionaire companies at the expense of we the people." So chopping up full-time work and spreading it out to part-time work is not a job creation program in any intelligent person's lexicon. But it is okay to say no. Portland's motto is the city that works. Here's the question. Will you folks vote to have the city work for the predatory out-of-town corporations and Wall Street company or banks, or will you vote to have the city work for local businesses and local people? Once again, it is absolutely okay to vote no for TNCs. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
The next three are Justin Byington, Vicki DeVincent, and Dirk Warninghoff. And they will be followed by Linda Rabb, Dan Barron, and Vivian Catlaps.
Good afternoon. Go ahead. Whoever would like to be first. Go ahead.
Okay. All right. Hi, and thank you all for being here and hearing us.
Just give us your name. Sorry.
I'm Vicki DeVincent with Radio Cab. I've been driving since May 2012. I have always been proud of driving with Radio Cab. I've constantly had customers from out of town compliment not only us as Radio Cab, but that's a reflection on you, the city council, because I've had compliments that our cabs are clean, our drivers are professional, they care about the customers, they feel safe. They're efficient, and we've always known that the city council was the one that voted to limit the amount of permitted taxis on the road, which what that does is it ensures there isn't a monopoly with medallion systems. It ensures there's not overpopulation of taxi drivers so that the taxi drivers are driving safely. They're not scraping ends meet and rushing to red lights to get customers because they're able to make a living wage. Now, I also learned that Radio Cab used to have a union, but they didn't need it anymore because they had the city council put in place regulations that kept the community safe by having safe drivers. So, but since then, our community has grown with people moving here, with tourism increasing. We've become so foodie that people come here to visit. Our taxi companies have been begging and begging and begging for more permits to a limit that ensures the regulations keep everybody safe. And now, If we had those permits, we would have been able to see the need and meet the need of wheelchair drivers. I drive a wheelchair van. It gets 18 miles to the gallon. It's not, you know, a great business model to do it, but I do it. I love my community. And when you have people driving around not safe, not limited on how many hours they can work, I've heard of Uber drivers driving 20 hours a day. Our accidents on the road are going to go up They already have. You can already find data that since May, there's been more traffic accidents. There's going to be more fatalities. If we completely deregulate the system the way it's looking like it's going to, the only way to get it back to the quality taxi service that we've had is for fatalities and injuries on the road that I don't want to see in my community.
Thank you. Thanks very much. Welcome.
Justin Byington. I work for Radio Cab. I'd like to note, though, that I was an activist long before I was a cab driver. I want to thank you for hearing our concerns today. I'm sure you can tell by the roses on our cabs and also here that we are very proud to serve Portland. We love the city because it's a progressive and very livable place due to the citizens' appreciation and support of local businesses. What happens here in Portland, it's not just important to those of us that live here, but also to other cities because they view us as a model for how well a city can work. While I sympathize with people just trying to get by, I've heard many emotional testimonies by those people, making a living driving for Uber and Lyft. I think there's a real disconnect when it comes down to what a corporation like Uber has as an image and what they actually will do. The companies, they put profits over people and, caused the recession by doing so. And now with this new sharing economy, they're trying to take control of that sharing economy and take advantage of that to externalize their costs and to also take money out of our local economy. They aren't doing this by creating jobs. They're doing this by shifting to a less professional model that infiltrates an established locally run industry of experienced drivers, permitted professionals. Uber says that they're providing a lot of firsts regarding service here, but saying that you're going to provide something and actually doing it is different. Should we as a city support a company that admits they do not provide needed services in other markets because they're not required to? Just stating that a service is a good idea, but then not actually implementing it, that's not a solution. In summary, will Portland uphold a higher standard for the services to the public that we provide by keeping it local and putting people over profits? Or is this a case where corporations with lots of lobbyists and money dictate the restructuring of an industry that values profits over the people of Portland? Thank you for your time and considering our concerns.
Thank you. Good evening.
Hi, my name is Dirk Warninghoff. Thank you for your time today. I would like to address one of the advisory board guiding principles, which is no competitive advantage is granted to any provider for excluding classes of passengers or opting out of compliance with city, state, and federal standards. You're giving a competitive advantage by making us have forced caps by our percentage of wheelchair fleets that we put on a road, where the TSCs have no caps at all, so they don't. But they don't need any wheelchair vans. You give the TNCs a competitive advantage because unless you have a smartphone and a debit card, you can't order one, so taxis have to be for everybody. To accessible services, why is there no minimum requirement put on the TNCs? We had a minimum requirement for years. How is this fair at all? Your accessible transportation fund is a complete joke. You're giving big business a huge break. While the little guys have already been complying for years, get railroaded over with their wheelchair vehicle investments. Fishing has caps in this state, and so we still have enough fish for everyone. Transportation needs caps, so there's enough money to go around. When I attended a task force meeting, a majority of Uber drivers agreed with me on caps, but we all agreed their company would not agree with that. Are you rewriting these rules for the drivers who drive in this city or for the companies that employ the drivers? Because it certainly feels like you continue to make concessions for big business and not for the Portland working driver. As of labeling of vehicles, so that all sides the public knows it's a transportation vehicle, 80% of complaints about taxis are from bystanders outside the taxi. How can you call to complain about a driver if you don't know it's a commercial vehicle? It would be really nice if they just had magnets maybe, like the Oregonian does, on all sides of the vehicle when they're working so that someone could know that it's an Uber car. That doesn't sound like it's that hard. And what about enforcement fees? Before the pilot program, each taxi in the city was required to pay $600 a year in enforcement fees. Every private for hire should have to have $600 down for their vehicle. If they have 2,000 vehicles, that's $1.2 million for enforcement fees for the city so that you can have people out there making sure that people are following the rules. Same fares, same rules, and I just was wondering what Brooke meant was, how does surge equal dynamic? I don't know. Thank you for your time, guys.
Thank you. Thank you.
The next four are three are Wendy Kellington speaking for Linda Rabb, and we'll go with Dan Varon, Vivian Catlaps, and they'll be followed by Tim Weller, Tony Seymour, and Dan Atkins. So I've got right now is Wendy Kellington, Dan Varon, and Vivian Catlaps.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Wendy Kellington. I'm an attorney. I'm representing EcoCab, the latest cab company into the cab ecosystem. As you take a little bit of additional time to study innovation in the city's private for hire regulatory program, we want you to please give some serious consideration to one very, very important issue, and that's insurance and how it affects your other policies and social goals for the serving the traveling public and for the taxi cab industry. To answer Commissioner Fish's question a long while back, what has been the cost to the cab companies, both pre and post pilot? For EcoCab, it's been $100,000. And that's because apparently Uber convinced someone that it was necessary for the city to abandon its approval of EcoCab's A-rated by Demotech, not the the AM Best cartel, but A-rated Demotech insurance in favor of the kind of insurance that Uber gets. And it's like a sole source carrier. And so the insurance companies are allowed to charge whatever they like. And that's $100,000 for a new company like EcoCab that has zero-emission vehicles. To Commissioner Fritz's point, we are very interested in the emissions from taxi cabs, and so our business model is one that does not have those. We have Teslas on the road. So tomorrow we're going to get a letter that we've got 120 days to buy that $100,000 extra Uber-type insurance. And what do you get for that? Well, that kind of insurance, we are informed, is one that's called non-admitted. That means they don't play by Oregon's rules, and they don't pay into the safety net fund that the state has. And so if they are, in fact, big enough to fail, there's no coverage for the city, and there's no coverage for an injured customer. So, and what do you lose? Well, potentially you lose a really cool company. Can we survive? I don't know. Zero emission, Teslas. Paying attention to the disability community. Drivers are paid decent wages. They're employees. They get benefits, sick leave, vacation, 401k, health insurance. We think you ought to look real close at what maybe Uber has been telling you about insurance and balance what you really think you need. Maybe an AM Best B rating or B plus rating works okay. What you really need to achieve your goals for taking care of the traveling public, making sure they have access to the state's safety fund, safety net, and that you support these companies that are trying to do taxi cabs with decent living wages. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Kellington, I really appreciate your comments. I didn't understand the whole thing about the insurance. I want to get to other people's testimony. If you could either follow up with me, send me something, I want to understand better because obviously you know a lot about it. Thank you.
Same here. Would you submit that to us as well?
I'd be delighted. Thank you for asking.
Thank you. That'd be helpful.
Good luck.
Okay, who'd like to be next? Go ahead.
My name is Vivian Catlaps, and I am a driver with RadioCab. And first, Commissioner Fritz, I'd like to thank you for, again, bringing up the environmental factor of adding so many cars to the road. And I believe it's over 2,000 that they've quoted. And the task force mentioned that they don't have enough information concerning the environmental impact, but I was suggesting maybe they should be in contact with somebody at DEQ or EPA or ODOT to know how so many more cars are going to be impacting the roads. And I'm sure that they also have information about the number of miles that are being driven. One of my biggest concerns with the TNCs, specifically Uber, is that all of their advertising is for more drivers. Not only that, they specifically encourage people to purchase brand new cars through their, what I've heard to be, shifty loan agreements with financial companies or getting people to sign up with these companies. And there's a huge impact of the number of vehicles that are being produced. We don't need brand new cars on the road. We already have bad traffic. Our roads are suffering. The emissions right now, even concerning the weather, it's not a good state to have no caps on the number of vehicles that are driving around. Another thing that the task force representative mentioned was that TNCs may overall decrease the number of vehicles on the road by providing so many trips, which I think is really unlikely, considering how their whole model is to increase the number of drivers on the road. Also, if that's the case, then you really need to bring